So I wanted to talk today with you about something that you and I have actually discussed in particular, something you recently wrote about in your blog, and you wrote about it in length. So I figured if we could just speak about it for those who are maybe not going to read the lengthy blog, maybe get an idea of what it was that you what you felt about the recent news about these two prominent leaders in the Christian community who have recently, I'll just use the words that you see kind of all over Google, but or all over the internet, I'm sorry, that have denounced Christianity. And so one of them being Josh Harris, which is a famed Christian author, and another being Marty Sampson, who is a Hillsong songwriter. So for us, I know initially when we heard this news, I don't know if we were shocked. I don't even know if we were even aware of these two men in particular. I'm not sure I knew of either. For most Christians, it would be more of a shock, and they're trying to figure out and wonder, oh my gosh, what happened? And for me, it was like, oh my gosh, Sterling, look at this, how cool. And so I would like to explain why for us it was actually a cool thing, and also for you to explain why you are able to relate to these men. And so it's happening a lot lately, it seems. Whether it's in small churches where people know somebody in their community, or it's this big. And people tend to think that it's actually a negative thing. They're worried, they're scared, they think it's people that are lost, wandered away from God. And so what would you call this? Or are they leaving God, or
That's a good question. I've noticed in several different community groups or writings or blogs that it's been said for a while that the church is dwindling either in its attendance or in sizes, things of that nature. And I also read one recently where it said that people are migrating to different faiths. And so it's just kind of a movement or an exchange. And depending on your perspective, I can understand how it would seem to be that way when people leave your faith group and they don't go to the church next door. They're talking some new language. It could seem that they're leaving God.
for us, we realized people are starting to realize that God can be found in many places, and some are very unfamiliar, and even places where we thought, oh no, that's the enemy, or the enemy's over there. And so
Well, you said excitement. I think what we're seeing here is confirmation in our own hearts, that people want a grander idea of love, a grander idea of God. People don't want to be limited or bound by old ideas of what love looks like or old ideas of what God looks like. It takes constant tension, ideas, and thoughts of war and of fear to maintain these boundaries that are kind of conflicting with how we feel naturally. And kind of conflicting about what we're told of this grand love, this grand God that's forgiving and merciful and all these things. If it's that good, if it's that true, why are there the limitations? Why are there the boundaries? Why are those boundaries established with fear of this same God? And I think people are wanting to leave those kinds of marginalized, intolerant kind of views because it doesn't jive well with the human experience, especially if we are educated in our history.
It's a new sense of freedom. I think when you come to Christianity or you get saved, you feel freed from what's like, it's a different type of freedom. Freedom to look at people the same way you see yourself.
Absolutely. And depending on your background and where you're coming from, that determines how you word your experience. Like in my own experience, leaving Jehovah's Witness to Christianity, I felt like I was doing wrong, but I was following a deeper knowing that says, why does this have to be wrong? We're still talking love. It's just a brighter picture of it. It's a grander idea of it. But there was another part of me that's thinking through the past and what others might be saying. And their interpretation would be, you're being deceived. You're leaving the flock. You're being led astray. And so there's that conflict. I think in every religion or tradition, you experience
Every belief system.
that collision of what you've been trained to understand as opposed to your deep intuition, your heart, the leading of the spirit or God, some would say. We wouldn't dare say that if we're on this side of the camp that that's God because it doesn't look like more of the same. But it has to be the same thing as we begin to migrate through these processes of wanting to know the depth and the height. If it's really unlimited and it's better than we could imagine, it has to be on that trajectory. I find in my experience that I break through a bubble, I break through a membrane, sort of like an egg, a chick hatching through the egg. Mm-hmm. And then he learns to survive in that freedom and that atmosphere. But then there's the next level. He's got to learn to fend for himself. His mother's going to stop feeding him. And so there's that extra level of learning your environment and your autonomy and being self-aware so that you can sustain life on that level. But then eventually you have to fly. That's another learning curve. But with that is struggle. But there's a level of freedom. Now I'm not just stuck to the ground. The whole world is mine.
Because I think we're often taught in religions and certain beliefs that to not get too confident in your personal relationship and walk with God. Oh, no, listen over here. You can still be led astray and be aware of that and be worried about that. And so when you are like that chick who's kind of like, mom's not going to feed me anymore, that you have to come to that way of thinking on your own, because the church would rather be like, no, we are going to feed you. And this is how much we think you understand, or this is the way to understand life in the world. And then it reminds me of that movie Smallfoot, but we might get off topic if we go there. But fear is kind of just passed down.
So, it's unfortunate that fear becomes the ruling, it's the ruling idea to avoid, to be safe, to create a sense of security. Well, how do you know what those things are? Fear of the border, fear of different ideas, fear of what could happen. We don't even realize that that's the forefront of why we're doing what we're doing.
Right.
The avoidance of, the fear of being misled or away from God or away from love, whatever it is, that becomes the pronouncement. But it's overlaid by a love for God, you know, it's painted over with, and we don't, it's just a nice facade that then we don't see for what it is.
Right.
And so I think that's a reality that you're only going to come to when you start digging, when you start scratching at the paint. It says one thing, but it feels like another. What's
right
behind this, you know?
Exactly.
And it takes a seeker or really wanting more or just a contemplation of your life and just how this process is already happening, how you've had breakthroughs, how you've done the things that you wanted, how you denied fear because your dream was more important than any possible scenario of fear. Well, that whole thing I just explained there about chasing your dream, regardless of the consequences or the fear, is the spiritual journey, period. It's
right.
It's like that's reality across the board. It's not just in the business world. It's not just in the spiritual world. It's like, that's how life is, period.
Right.
And so,
and going back to these men where it says they kind of denounce their faith, people tend to think that's denouncing God or like you wrote about, kind of, now we no longer believe in the church or the Bible or God himself. And really what they're letting go of is the fear that's been keeping them there. And I still consider myself a Christian, and that might not necessarily be the word I use when I describe myself. It's just a big part of my life, Christianity and that belief system. But I think when they let go of that being like a term that describes who they are, their belief or their walk, I think they're really letting go of what it supposedly stands for, like how you view the world. This is what Christians think about this. This is what Christians think about that group of people. And I think they want to let go of that and be just Jesus lovers, or you know what I mean?
Yeah, just a universal love.
So it's nothing to be offended by if you are a Christian. It's nothing to worry about. I think it's just they know what the world, who feels unloved by people who consider themselves godly people or people who have the Spirit of God living in them, they felt rejected by them. They felt unloved. And so when they think of a Christian, they have a certain idea of what that may look like or what that may be. And they want to just define themselves differently now. And like you said, like that baby chick of just now, I want to figure this out on my own. I want to hear from God. Mm. You tell me that God lives in me. He has a still quiet voice that I can hear. And I need to be confident in that and let go of the fear that there's somewhere I can go where God is not, or that the enemy's voice is very similar to God's and you can easily be deceived. You have to let go of all those fears and explore God. And people tend to mourn that as if they're leaving God, where these folks actually are craving more of him. So what about your personal journey. A lot of people tend to think like this is just happening. Oh, this is like this new thing happening. We have recently been listening to a pastor where he's been on this journey for 16 years, which is when we actually first became Christians. And so there are people that are kind of deconstructing their faith from, or their belief from, you know, many years ago. And it seems to be, I think people are getting a little bit more comfortable with sharing that. But this is a journey you've been on for how long now?
3 years, 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to go back to that word deconstruction that you said there.
Yeah.
Because I think it's important to establish what that means, because it's not a theological term or a Christian term, you know. And right. So,
but it is going to be a term I think people are going to start hearing.
Absolutely. Going forward, you're going to hear that. And what I think that means is sort of like a more traditional biblical word, you know, a refining process of removing the dross, you know. A lot of things can be attached to our faith because of people's experiences or the interpretation or a cultural thing or whatever it is. We can attach different ideas to our faith, and they're not so much true, but they help us to try to comprehend on a certain level how this could possibly work. And oftentimes we assume that they're one and the same. They go hand in hand with the original idea of love.
Right.
And so I think deconstruction is a way to remove the clutter and the ideas and the stigmas and the boundaries and the limitations and the borders, so that that true reality of love, removing those impurities, so that your love is unconditional and that we truly represent what love is or what Christ is.
Right.
And so I say the scripture all the time. Jesus says, you must be perfect like your Father in heaven. He says, look at the sun. It shines on the good and the evil, the just and the unjust. It rains on everybody. And so our love is supposed to be like that, because he says, you must be perfect like your Father in heaven. And so we have limitations about that love because of people's religions, their orientation or whatever. And it's not that we don't love them, but it's like a superficial love. It's
right.
Like
that's what I was going to say.
We have conditional love.
We have to define love, because a lot of me personally, when I was, you know, 16 years of being in Christianity, I could tell you confidently, yes, I love all people. Doesn't matter what background, what you gender you identify with, what who you are, what you've done, I love you. But that's easier said than done. Now, will I welcome you into my home? Will I allow my children to see your life play out and not be afraid? Will I feed you? Will I be there for you? Will I continue to be there for you as you make mistakes? Will I be there regardless of if you come to my church or not, or if you listen to what I say, if you say the sinner's prayer, or if you reject me when I ask you, would you like to accept Jesus? If you say no, I wouldn't, not interested. Will I still love you then? Or will, you know what I mean?
It's like, it's a motive behind it, our love. It's like, so it's a love with a mission. It's a love on a campaign. It's a love to do a particular thing, which is convert you so that I can change your lifestyle, change your ways of thinking. And I do it.
So I could be truly comfortable loving you now.
Yeah. Why? Because you're going to conform to what I think is God's standard. You know, I'm really trying to change you for the better, thinking that your life is going to be better. So I do it with a certain level of ignorance, but it's also a limitation because I don't quite understand what love is. And so I'm only loving you to change you. I'm only loving you. And if I don't see fruit, then I stop, you know.
Right.
And so the only way
I define fruit for you.
Exactly.
I define what it looks like for you. Hopefully this doesn't go too far off topic, but in speaking of that, in recent days, you and I have talked about, I feel like in this journey, you're in a different place. Me, I'm glad you defined deconstruction, because I was thinking deconstruction means like do away with everything you've ever heard and believe and know.
Right.
But it really is something that I've already done, which is I had to let go of the fear and start believing in the verses that I've quoted for so many years about God's faithfulness, about God's love, about God's protection, about just all those good things. I had to let go of fear and believe those and say, wait a minute, is there somewhere I can go where he is not? Is he just sitting there allowing me to be, you know, deceived by the enemy? Or am I confident that the voice I hear is his? And so I had to let go of all those fears, and that allowed me to hear people and see people that that I did not see and hear before. The kind of love we tend to share, like when we're doing outreaches or we go to serve people in the community and we go to feed the hungry and then we come and we try to lead them in sinner's prayer. What kind of love is that? And how, that's just something that's recently irked me because I've felt like, how dare I think that I have something that they don't have, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Or because I go to church each Sunday or I'm involved in something and you don't seem to be, you must not know him. You must not love him. You must not, you know, you need what I've got, you know? And so here's this bag of groceries or this, whatever we have to offer you. But do you know God? Because in other words, I'm assuming you don't. Because
yeah, you have a need. You're taking.
Right. So what kind of love is that? It's like, we're going to go love on our neighbors and we're going to go pray with them. Because if you are live in a lower income or you are in need of anything, you are in need of God. If your life doesn't resemble, you know, what I think it should look like, then you must need God. And so I'm here to hand you this bag of groceries or hand you these shoes or these clothes. But hey, this isn't all you need. I have God to offer you.
You're right. It's a mindset that we have about people in general.
Yeah.
And that we have about ourselves, that we're in lack, that we need, that we're nothing unless. And when you start off on the wrong foot like that, with that thought in mind, everything's already sabotaged.
And it just doesn't sound and seem like love.
Yeah.
Because love doesn't care where you are at.
You said something and I was going to go for it. It reminds me of what we think about God, that God is requiring something of us. God is mad. And,
or that he needs anything.
And that he needs something. And the only way to give what he needs is to go through a certain narrow, specific path. And because we have that image about God, we reproduce that idea in ourselves. And so we check off the list that we think God requires. And then we reproduce it in others by saying, hey, I'll give you what you need. I'll help you. I'll love you. I'll call it love. But follow this trail, follow this path, follow this thing that you need in order to be connected to God.
So maybe deconstructing, does it kind of involve that idea of just kind of letting go of those beliefs that people are in need of something from you, that God is in need of something from you. And then now you're able to clear your mind and break free and be like, you know what? He's not mad. He doesn't need anything from me. His love is not conditional. So I can go wander over there and be safe.
Yeah.
Or I can go listen, talk to that atheist and hear from him and not worry that he, you know, the enemy's just sitting there about to attack me in that space or with that person.
Absolutely. And when I go meet somebody's needs, I'm doing it just because, not because I've got an agenda or a motive behind it.
And we tend to think they don't sense it. They know it.
Yeah.
And they play exactly along with you and they will follow you in that prayer. But the reason that they don't stay in that space, and sometimes you don't see them at church that next Sunday after they went a couple Sundays after you invited them, is because they didn't and still don't feel the genuine love unless they are being something other than who they truly are.
Exactly.
That is just the name Christianity has kind of, I think, made for itself. Sorry. And that is why these men, when they denounce Christianity, I think they're letting go of that idea that people have in their minds of what a Christian is.
Yeah, or it's a conditional reality because of a conditional God. And even in the scripture, it can seem contradictory that God is so good to be better than what you could possibly thought. Eyes haven't seen, ears haven't heard, you know. But then there's this other reality that you sometimes get from scripture because of the personalities of the people and the way they understood 2,000 years ago, that God is the mad, jealous, angry, vengeful, fear the Lord kind of God. And so we have a problem reconciling the two. And so for me, it's like Jesus came on the scene. You've heard it said, a knife for a knife, tooth for a tooth. I'm telling you, go the extra mile, turn the other cheek. He's like painting this unconditional love that does not require anything. Just be the unconditional presence of love. Remove all these standards, limitations, judgments that you thought God was about. That was just a limited time, limited understanding kind of a thing based on a culture and people that were like close to Stone Age or whatever. That this was the best that they had. But we're along the way now.
Right.
And so if I try to do those same things, I might actually kill you and hurt you and harm you because we as a human species are on another level. And so we can understand the essence of what was trying to be said there, but we're always supposed to be progressing. And so today in our age, we're still progressing and saying, hey, that was a great idea of love and it served us, but let's continue the trajectory as we continue to grow in the depth and the height. And that means my language is going to change the concepts and ideas, but it's never leaving God because you can't leave God. Right. And sometimes we're stuck in our pockets, our oasis of stagnant ponds, thinking that if you use the same, a different word or express God in another way, it's not the same God. But we never really understood the totality of God to begin with. So right. We're just growing in the idea of Him. But until we settle that idea of love, there's always that element of fear that we're going to leave God, because the incorrect idea about God, that He needs something from us, right. Is going to wipe us out if we don't give it.
I think we could go on for a long time, but I think we should keep it under the 30-minute mark, because I want to speak about how we felt about when these men denounced their Christianity, and also on how we got to where we are. I will leave off with this. I remember, just like everybody who knew you before, I remember thinking that me and the kids were going to hell in a handbasket, and you were taking us with you because you were now reading things outside of, let's say, that would not be sold in a Christian bookstore, except in a Christian bookstore. You were not only reading the Bible. And fear set in to the point where I was physically, like, felt it. Like, it was just overwhelming. And so a lot of people may think that at that point I was like, I care about my marriage and my children more, so I'm going to jump to go to the dark side with them. When in reality, all I simply did was let go of fear and open my mind to a grander idea of love. And that allowed me to come on this journey. And eventually you and I crossed paths again on this journey. Thank you guys for joining us. I think we will end it here and continue this series. This will be one of, I'm not sure how many series, Leaving the Church to Find God.
Thanks for joining us. Hit like, subscribe, all that good stuff. Bye.